Welcome to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by thesoberclub.com. I'm Genuinely Grace. This is for you if you've quit the booze or you'd like to, or maybe you're just sober curious. I'll bring you tips and motivation without any judgment, and there'll be inspiration from experts, quitlet authors, and sober heroes. Hi, and welcome to the podcast. I hope you're well as we spring forward into spring. It's finally here. We've been so lucky, haven't we? So lucky in some parts of the UK anyway. I know it's not everywhere. I was coaching someone the other day who was in Scotland, and where she was, the weather wasn't nice at all. So I felt a bit smug going on about how lovely it was here. I do hope you're well, and I hope everything's going okay for you. It's been one of those weeks where I think I've become aware of so many different extremes. And yet again, it's made me just kind of really recognise that whatever I thought my opinions were, you know, they can get shaken up. My opinions, my beliefs, everything. But I think that's good. It's good to be open, isn't it? Really, I think it's good to be willing to look at loads of different sides of stories. And I think also we get a little bit caught up sometimes in where we're at in a certain situation, and it's easy to forget that other people are you know, at a different stage of whatever it is that's going on. I'm waffling, obviously, but I'm thinking particularly of a bunch of posts in the Sober Club. As you know, the Sober Club is very much for people who are at any stage. It really is about the any stage. That's why I get reminded, I suppose, so much. So if you've decided to stop drinking and you know, you want support and encouragement and resources, then it's absolutely the place to come. But we also have members who are 5-6 years down the line, because there's always something else, and it's the something else, the everything else, that is, you know, my real passion, really. Because you fairly quickly realise that you know, ditching the booze is the foundation piece. It's mega important. Without it, really, you can't build anything else. So it really is that foundation piece. But once you've got the foundations, you've got to then build, right? And that usually means, I've got my building analogies here, haven't I? Usually means digging deep and finding out what's going on. So anyways, on that note, there was a post in the Sober Club, and it really resonated with me, because I thought, wow, I could have written exactly that post, you know, 4 years ago, or maybe 4 years and a month ago or whatever. And it really does sum up the way so many people feel. This person says, I'm on day 19. I can't remember when was the last time I've been sober that long. I can feel the difference. And then he or she goes on to say, but I'm still really tired. I'm still craving alcohol. I realise I can't drink away my feelings. And then goes on to say, you know, I don't feel very happy. And it's so interesting, isn't it? We expect that once we ditch the booze, we will immediately feel super happy, super energized, sleep well, have loads of friends. We just have this bonkers expectation that if we do this thing that we know is hard, it will instantly be the magic pill for everything. I know that I felt like that. I really did. And this person says, I've discovered I'm lonely. I don't know where to meet people. I don't regret giving up alcohol, but I'm scared because it feels really stressful. And then somebody else responded, and I thought that this is, again, why it's so wonderful to be part of a community, because everyone's got a different take on it. And someone else says, you know, it's a really honest post. It really resonated with me. I don't want to drink alcohol, but having a bloody great big spotlight put on those areas of your life that previously you'd hide from in a bottle is very unsettling. That's such a good way of putting it. And then this person says, I'm going to carry on. I'm not going to make any rash decisions, but I know the changes are going to be for the better. And I'm going to keep myself healthy with good food and exercise and tread water for a bit and see where it goes. And I said, actually, in our group, great expression, tread water for a bit. That's exactly what it's like. If you are in the early days and you're feeling these feelings, this is why you have to share them, because you probably think you're the only one who's ever felt this way. I did. I absolutely thought, this can't be right. I've done this really hard thing that I know I needed to do, but I don't feel happy. I feel really unsettled. I feel chaotic. That was one of the words I came up with to describe how I felt. Nothing quite seemed to fit into place. When you think about it logically, it's no bloody wonder. If you've been drinking for years and years and years, that's become your identity. It's your default position. Your brain chemistry is so completely out of whack when you stop. And quite frankly, everything needs to recalibrate. It really does need time to just adjust. Recovery, they call it, right? You know, I use that word maybe slightly differently to someone who is, goes through AA and the 12-step program. But I do believe that if you are in the early stages of ditching the booze, most definitely, you know, for the first couple of months, you do need to treat it as a recovery period. Because let's face it, you've been abusing your body and your mind probably for a hell of a long time. So you have to be kind to yourself and take it gently. You know, so if you're in that same situation as that poster there, and I know there'll be loads of people who are, and it may not be because you're early stages ditching the booze, by the way. I've had members who have written practically the same stuff and they're 6 months sober, or perhaps even coming up to a year, and they still have that emptiness. They still have that gap. They still haven't quite slotted in. They perhaps are lonely. They've got time on their hands. That's a very common thing. You know, I know it sounds like I'm queen of positivity, right? And I'm painting the most awful picture here, aren't I? I'm trying to get to the good bit, which is that this is worth it. It's absolutely worth it. You simply have to see this as a period of time and use it to just, as that wonderful, you know, message said, tread water for a bit. I mean, stay afloat, stay calm, but tread water for a bit and just be curious about what's next and absolutely take care of yourself. Don't tread water on that bit. That's where you do have to put the effort in. You do have to eat really well, because if you don't, your brain chemistry will absolutely be shot to pieces. It's super important to eat properly. I've got a very interesting podcast guest coming up in a few weeks around intuitive eating. Oh, man alive, that'll spin everything on its head, 360 degrees. Anything you thought you knew about nutrition and body image and weight management, man alive, that's going to be a good one. But anyway, it's really important to eat super well. If you're going through one of these phases, whether you're in the early stages of ditching the booze or whether you've been sober for ages, this is about looking within and actually asking yourself, what's really going on? All of the stuff that you used to numb with booze. It was easy then, in inverted commas. Whatever was going on, whether you were happy, sad, fearful, whatever it was, let's just have a drink, right? And we don't do that anymore. So we have to train ourselves to find another way to feel balanced. And often the joy, to quote the wonderful book title, amazing, all of her book titles are incredible, by Catherine Gray, it's the unexpected joy of the ordinary, right? I never understood that when I was drinking. I couldn't understand how I had friends who seemed calm and balanced and happy, and they would be delighted by a really nice cup to have some tea in. Or absolutely, you know, thrilled to bits with buying a really tiny crystal. Or it was just, everything just seemed too nice. And I just used to think, that's just so boring. How ridiculous. It was absolutely me that was boring. All I could think of was, you know, getting somewhere to get a glass of wine down my neck, rather than appreciate little things, right? So anyways, I got onto a bit of a rant there. But I hope that just might resonate with somebody. Whatever stage you're at, if you've got that empty feeling, it's not because you need to go back to drinking. The drink never did do anything for you. It just covered up the emptiness that was there anyway. And it's entirely normal to feel this way. You know, as again, another podcast guest, Carla McLaren, says, we do have to embrace all emotions. They're there to tell us something. And it can be super uncomfortable. We hate the emotions that aren't the happy ones. We hate them. But we just have to become curious. What will happen next if I carry on eating really well? If I carry on looking after myself? If I stay connected? If I grab myself a journal and make a note of my thoughts? If I join a community like the Sober Club or whatever resonates with you? If I share my thoughts with other people? God knows, I might even be able to help someone who's coming up at an earlier stage than I am. How will that be? Just ask yourself those questions. It's amazing what difference it can make if you just become conscious and aware rather than trying to fight it the whole time. Anyways, you never know. Might resonate with someone. I'm so pleased that my guest today, I don't think I've ever interviewed anyone from the world of sport before, but really pleased that Fraser Franks, former footballer, is my guest. Really fascinating journey. It's wonderful, isn't it, the people you can meet just by them following you on Instagram or whatever. And Fraser contacted me because he'd listened to the podcast. So just amazing how these connections can happen. Just before I get into that interview, I just want to remind you that we have a Sober by the Sea event. It's in sunny Southend. Well, I hope it'll be sunny on May the 7th. Lovely venue. We create a vision board. It's just a really lovely kind of retreat afternoon, early evening. And it doesn't matter what stage you're at. It's not about, sitting around and talking about, whether or not you're going to ditch the booze. We've people come who are thinking about it. People come who are 7 years sober. It's just if you want to connect with like-minded people. Tiny, tiny, tiny group, though. So if you're interested, do have a look. It's thesoberclub.com. Click on events and it's called Sober by the Sea. Or just message me. You can follow me on Instagram at Janie Lee Grace and you can always message me there. By the way, always tell someone if you ditch the booze. I know I've said this before. I'm starting to get a few messages come through now. People say, you told me I had to tell someone, so I'm telling you. That's okay. You may not want to tell anyone close to you, but tell someone you're doing this. Hold yourself accountable. Share it. Make it. Voice it. Actually, using your voice is really important. Voice it. Okay. It's super important to do that. May the 7th, Sober by the Sea. April 23rd, if you're in Scotland, there's a Sober Club endorsed meetup on Saturday the 23rd of April. So it's before our Sober by the Sea. So again, if you go to thesoberclub.com and click on events, you'll find it there. So let's hear the interview. My guest is Fraser Franks, who was a former professional footballer, has done all sorts of interesting things. And Fraser, it's lovely to have you with us on the podcast.
Oh, thank you. It's a voice that I'm used to hearing now. It was something I seeked out quite early in my sobriety journey. So
podcasts, yeah. Well, I think I saw a post on Instagram where you mentioned my podcast, and I just checked out what you did, and I thought, well, that would be interesting because I don't think I haven't really interviewed very many people from the world of sport, and yet obviously it's a really interesting. There are so many interesting connections, I think, between health and well-being and sport, obviously. But yeah, really interested in your background. So tell us what it was like then presumably you did start when you were a kid, basically start playing football, right? Tell us a bit about that journey.
It started off very early. So probably identified football as my main passion, as a lot of kids in England do. I grew up on a council estate in South London and was playing out a lot, and just loved football. Luckily at the age of 8, I signed for Chelsea. So that was the club that I supported as a kid, and I didn't live too far from the stadium and stuff like that. So
that was like a kind of a youth program.
It was their academy, yeah.
Yeah, brilliant.
And you put into that at 8 years old. And I stayed there for 7 years before I got released. But then went to Brentford and, ended up having a 12-year career as a professional, which ended quite suddenly 3 years ago.
Right. Okay. We'll get onto that in a bit. So I'm guessing then that because you were obviously, really focused on your football, I'm guessing that in your sort of early teens, it kind of wasn't an option to be drinking too much, right? What happened then? Because I'm guessing all your mates were getting into alcohol. What happened for you?
Yeah, I've always associated alcohol as a negative from as early as I can remember. I've seen my mum was in a you know, poor relationship with my dad, and he was a bad drunk, and there's lots of memories that I don't like of my childhood from that sort of time, and alcohol played a massive part in that. Mm. But luckily we left that home when I was 10 years old. But I always had that association with a negative with alcohol. I didn't like seeing people drunk. I saw good people make poor decisions. Mm. And from as early as I can remember, I vowed that I would never touch a drop. All through school, it was never anything that interested me. As you say, when I got to probably 14, 15, 16, all of my friends would be going to parties, they'd be going to the park or whatever it might be, and drinking on a Friday, Saturday night. But for me, I had training the next day, yeah, or a game the next day. So it wasn't even a choice. It wasn't a sacrifice for me at the time. I just had no interest in it. And when I left school at 16 to become a full-time professional, I pretty much cut off my whole school friends. I knew that they were going down a certain path and started introducing sort of drugs and getting into a bit of trouble. And I just didn't want to be associated with that. So I completely cut away from anyone that was associated with at school and sort of began this new life and in professional sport really at 16.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting, you know, those of us who've got kind of, you know, some young sons, we kind of, you know, I've got lots of friends who are just desperate for their sons to play some kind of sport for exactly that reason. So they've got to be up on a Saturday morning. You know? Yeah. So it becomes a thing, and it definitely plays a big part. And obviously for you, I mean, really interesting that you say you kind of knew from a really early age that you didn't like being around, you know, drunk people. I mean, I think I'm sure lots of people have that experience, but then something shifts. And they kind of end up going down that path. So so then what happened for you after that then? When did you actually start drinking, and what was the reason?
So it was still pretty late for probably most teenagers. I was 17, so still underage, but pretty late. I was 17, but I now had all of my friends were footballers or aspiring footballers. And I'd go to maybe a party with them or a birthday or something like that. And I'd see they were drinking, and they were actually, a lot of them were better players than I was. I was extremely dedicated, but I was never the most talented. And I looked at them and they seemed like they were having a really good time. They were having a laugh. And I felt like I was almost like the wooden sober one whenever we went out. And it got to a stage where, probably because of my upbringing, I went to an all boys school, straight into a football environment. I didn't really mix socially very well. I had football, school, home, and there wasn't many other aspects to my life really. So when girls start getting introduced and parties and stuff like that, I probably lacked a little bit of confidence. And then seeing my friends that, you know, I knew that they were good players and they were getting away with drinking and training on a Monday morning. So yeah, I went to a party probably when I was 17 and had my first drink. It was probably a Smirnoff Ice or something like that. And I did find that it gave me a little bit of confidence, or it felt like it gave me a bit of confidence. I felt like I was now part of the group, instead of being isolated a little bit. And yeah, I probably felt a little bit accepted and confident, as I say.
So I mean, that was going to be my next question then, as to what is the scene in football? I mean, what, you know, both then and now, to the best of your knowledge, you know, do players drink, but just perhaps not just before a game or whatever?
Yeah, I do think there's that guilt element surrounding it, and shame. So you know that it's not going to benefit your performance if you drink, but you also don't want to seclude yourself so much that you don't have any kind of social life, or you don't mix with people or enjoy yourself. So there's a real,
it's so interesting, isn't it? Even just as you say that, it's so interesting how we just see alcohol as that social glue. It's almost impossible to use the word socialize or celebrate without thinking of alcohol. It's so ingrained in us.
100%. And I think with that, you know, you know it's wrong. So the first few times I drank, or even probably the first few years, I'd wake up the next day and I'd go for a run and I'd be like, right, I've got to get this out of my system. It's not good for me. And I'd have that guilt where probably, you know, 99% of people don't really have that if you're a young person enjoying yourself. But within football, you didn't drink often, but when you did, it was a binge. So it would be after a game on a Saturday night, every 3 or 4 weeks, you'd have one big night out, then you wouldn't drink for another 3 weeks or whatever it might be.
Right.
And I think in football, if you ask any player about a Christmas do, that is like a big pressure build up. So the boys, that's their one night out a year where the club say, right, go and enjoy yourself, have this Christmas do. So it's usually a weekend. And you just see players just go off the rails for this weekend. Yeah. You see them do things that you'd never see. And it's, I do think it's a build up of pressure. It's a build up of not really being able to do it normally. And I've seen it go terribly wrong. I've seen people have really good nights and stuff like that. But for me, there's a lot of pressure in football, in professional sport as it is. And I think a lot of people, apart from just using it socially, do get attracted to it to relieve a bit of pressure, to numb some of their overthinking or some of the feelings that they're going through. And that's something that happened to me at one point and, you know, into my retirement as well.
Yeah, it is amazing, isn't it, that you know, we don't know how to handle emotions. You know, we don't know how to, you know, as you say, let off steam, how to deal with pressure any other way. And it's seen that alcohol is the answer. And, you know, you say, oh, they have a, you know, the manager says, oh, go and have a great time or have a good night. And the association is that you have to drink too much to do that. It's so bonkers, isn't it, when you think about it logically, because all you do is make yourself feel like absolute shit. Yeah. I mean, there are zero benefits. And yeah, I mean, it's easy to talk about this now, isn't it? With the benefit of hindsight. But, you know, we've all been there where that association is so strong, so strong. And also, you know, that feeling of, you know, as you mentioned, that FOMO, that fear of missing out on something and not being included in the group. Yeah. That's a really tough one, you know, for young people, isn't it? When they don't feel included.
It is something that when you're a young player going into, so if you're 18 and you turn professional and you're now going into a changing room with 35-year-olds, you really want to be accepted. And you see young players, and when I became an older player, you could see the young ones coming through. They want to, when they go on a night out with the first team boys, they want to impress. They want to speak to as many girls as they can. They want to do some, you know, mad things so that they're accepted into the group. They want to impress. And it's a bit of a sort of toxic masculinity where people are trying to outdo each other. And if that's your personality normally and you're an extrovert and that is you, then it's almost acceptable to a degree. But for me, I was trying to do that when it was the complete opposite of my personality. I was quite introverted, very professional. So I'd wake up the next morning panicked. I thought, what have I done? What have I said to this person? You know, is this going to get back to a coach? Is this going to affect my football? Are my teammates going to look at me differently? And I was waking up with these feelings, and it became, you know, when I first started drinking, I looked back and I was quite sensible. I knew my limits. I knew when to stop during the night. But the older I got, it's almost as if the worse I got, and that off button just disappeared.
Yeah. And do you know if it's changed at all now? Because I'm just thinking, you know, with the rise of the sober curious and the fact that, you know, we're having this conversation and so much more out there, alcohol-free drinks are so much more acceptable. Do you think anything's changed a little bit for those young guys going in, or do you think it's probably much the same?
I think at the very top at the Premier League, you've got young players earning a lot of money with a lot of distraction. You've got a lot of pressure. You've got a lot of eyes on you. And I think now with camera phones and a lot of people getting caught out and making mistakes on you know, social occasions, I do think there's an element of it decreasing slightly there. But the level that I played at, not at all. It's still very prevalent. Sorry, you know, it got to a case for me where, if you'd had a really bad game, you get on the coach and you wanted distraction that evening. You don't want to go home and watch the highlights of your mistakes. Right. And that was a really big thing for me. And I can't imagine what it's like at the top level when you're under so much scrutiny. But I get in on a Saturday night, and if I've made a mistake on the pitch, I knew that everyone was going to be watching that on the highlights program on TV. So I wanted to take myself away from that. So my escape was, I need a drink. I need to forget about this. We'll worry about it Monday morning. Yeah. And then to the other extreme, when you win a game, it's such a relief that you're like, oh, let's celebrate. So on both emotions.
How amazing that alcohol can do both, eh?
Yeah. It's on both
relax
occasions.
Relax and stimulate. How cool. Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. I mean, it's incredible, really, when you think about it, that there isn't more available now, you know, more emotional support. So that, you know, why aren't kids taught? Why aren't young, you know, guys going into football
taught other ways of handling their emotions. You know, it wouldn't be rocket science, would it? You know, for them to be able to have another way of handling that.
It's something that I'm really keen. And when I go in and I present to young players, it's something I'm desperate to get across now. And
brilliant.
It's not just alcohol, it's escapism. So exactly. Some of them have no idea that they're running away from something.
No.
And it could be social media, it could be spending their money or on sort of retail therapy, it could be gambling, gaming is a huge one.
Yeah.
It could be sex, it could be drugs, it could be we've seen laughing gas and things like that boys are using. So there's so many different forms, but it's actually, I listened to it on a podcast once, they said actually identifying if it's alcohol or gambling, whatever it might be, isn't enough. That's like going and putting a fire out and trying to extinguish the smoke instead of getting to the bottom of it and actually realizing what's causing the fire.
Yeah. What is it you're trying to escape from, you know, and how can we deal with, find other ways of soothing ourselves effectively? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's brilliant that you're doing this work and putting such a positive spin on it. It's fantastic. So just tell back to where we were in the story then. So once the drinking sort of ramped up a little bit, what happened for you? When did you reach a point when you know just needed to stop? Had you already left football at that point? Because you had a health condition, is that right? And you had
I had to retire at the age of 28. I had a cardiac issue and I had an episode after a match. And
wow, that must have been absolutely awful.
Yeah, so it was something that happened really suddenly. So bizarrely, it was one of the biggest games of my career. It was on the Saturday. I played against Manchester City. And on the Tuesday, I was in hospital, and that was, the end of it, basically.
Wow.
So I thought I had probably 7 or 8 years left. And then I retired from football. And one thing I said before was I only ever really drank on a night out or a social event. So I never, ever drank at home. There would never be a beer in my fridge or anything like that. But when I retired, I was under observation, so I couldn't exercise for a little while. And I had a lot of time on my hands because I'd just come out and I wasn't financially secure. So in my head, I was very anxious. I was worried about what I was going to go into next. I was worried about how I was going to support my wife. And she was 8 months pregnant at the time with our first. So I was about to become a dad on top of that. So all of this just really built up. And I felt like I could have a few beers in the fridge because I didn't have training the next day. And that was probably the first time I didn't feel guilty when I had a drink. And then it went from 2 or 3 in the evening to 5 or 6, 6 or 7.
Yeah.
And I've got a really, really strong wife and mum. And if I went beyond a point, so if I had 4 beers, she wouldn't tell me off, but she'd say, is that another one you're opening there? And I'd get like that, almost like that little nagging feeling in my head because I knew it wasn't the right thing to be doing.
Mm.
And I knew that was having an effect on me, but I was in complete denial. So I began hiding drink. So I drink at home. We lived 30 seconds away from a Sainsbury's. So I'd pretend to take the dog, I would take the dog for a walk. I'd go and I'd get another couple and I'd hide one in the freezer. I'd put one in the garden maybe. So if she went to bed, I'd crack another one open and she wouldn't notice or anything like that. Then I'd always been the sensible one in our relationship, drunk and on a night out or whatever it was, at a meal, whatever it was. And I'd be the one looking after people and I became that liability. So I think when you're younger, maybe once in 10 times, you learn your lesson, you've gone over your limit. And then the next few times you're fine. For me, I just had no off button. And when the night was finishing, and if I went out with friends and they were on their way home, I'd go and drink for the train journey home.
You were just warming up.
And I just had no off switch and was making mistake after mistake. Even, you know, things that affected me work-wise, I remember going on courses with really, really good people and then it'd be sort of an open bar in the evening and I'd just go to excess and I'd wake up the next day and think, I've just spent, you know, a few hours with people that could really have a positive impact on me going forward. And I've just acted like an idiot, or I've just been this brash, loud person that I'm not. And I was just waking up with shame and guilt. And I hated sort of looking at myself in the mirror. I let myself go physically and just became sort of a shadow of what I was. And I didn't see a way out. It was, you know, I probably was depressed. I looked at I remember looking at old people and just thinking, how have you got to that age without, you know, taking your own life? And
yeah,
I was having those kind of thoughts, and yeah, just saw no way out. And I think a lot of sports people see it as, you know, your retirement age is sort of 35 usually within football. And then it's like everything else is downhill. And that's what I thought. I thought, right, my best days are behind me. You know, nothing's going to fulfill me like that did. And I'm going to bobble along now. And I just got myself in a really bad situation. And then I had one moment where I'd had an argument with my wife. My mum and my wife are the two closest people with me, and my little girl. They were downstairs, and I just spoke to them and just remember crying my eyes out and just said, I feel like I've got a problem. I said, I've been hiding drink from you. I'd been working away sometimes as well. So if I was in a hotel on my own, I would literally drink almost until I blacked out. And
yeah, yeah.
I really enjoyed being alone and drinking. It wasn't necessarily going to a pub or nights out. I just really wanted to be on my own, drink beer, and it would take me into, you know, free of my head and take me into this other world. But then I'd wake up the next day feeling a million times worse. So I said that to them, broke down, and, you know, they, yeah, I spoke to Sport and Chance and tried to get help that way.
Is that one a charity?
It's a Tony Adams founded it, who is a recovering alcoholic.
Right. Sporting Chance.
That is used. Yep. Sport and Chance. And I reached out to them and was appointed a therapist and a counselor. But when I first stopped, I stopped for 3 weeks, I think it was, and said, right, I think that's me done now. I think I've learned my lesson. I think I can moderate now. So I started having, I said, I'll have a glass of wine with my food, with my wife. And I did that for a week, and then had a couple of beers and stopped at two. And then probably a week later, I was out with two friends, and I said, right, I'm going to have a free beer rule today. And that's me done. And it got to three, and someone bought me another one. I was like, right, I'll just this one. And that night ended up falling over. I think I lost my wallet and woke up the next day, and I just saw the look of disappointment on my wife after I'd broken down and said I wasn't going to do this again.
Yeah.
And that was the point that I've you know, I've not touched a drop since, and my life has completely turned around now. And
yeah,
I'm hugely grateful that I recognized it before it was too late, and before I lost everything.
Yeah, God. And isn't it interesting, because, you know, you described that story, and, you know, as you describe what sort of happened to you, how you descended, in inverted commas, really quite quickly into, you know, a pretty desperate situation. If you'd have sort of, you know, if the word that you've been talking about was heroin or something, you know, we'd all just be going, oh, God, yeah, how absolutely awful, you know, that's terrible, but never happened to me, you know, I mean, or anyone I know. But it wasn't heroin, but it was a class A drug, effectively.
Yeah.
It, you know, it's just, it's so everywhere, so common, so pushed on you, so legal, so expected.
Yeah.
And yet look at what it can do in such a short space of time. You were literally in a trap. You were literally caught in that alcohol trap, weren't you? And thank God you could get out, because loads of people don't, do they? Yeah. They don't ever get out of that trap.
The reason I was in such denial is I looked at what the media had told me about what an alcohol issue was, or an alcoholic was.
Exactly.
It was someone that wakes up in the morning.
Yeah, and needs alcohol to get going. Yeah, exactly.
And it was, and I looked at other people and I was like, I can go weeks without drinking.
Yeah, so I must be all right.
I can't have a problem. Yeah, and exactly. It's not every time I go out. Yeah. It's most of the time I go out now, or most of the time I drink. But
yeah,
I was in such denial. And when I did have that moment where I broke down, it honestly, I've got messages in my phone that I look back on and try and reflect on and keep in my memory. But it literally was like a weight lifted off, and I could actually look at myself in the mirror and be honest with myself. And when I talk about some of the things that I did, or some of the things that happened back then now, it's almost as if I'm talking about a different person. And when I look at old pictures or videos and I can see that I'm visibly drunk, it's literally like looking at someone else. And it's when I first recognized the issue, I was so ashamed and so worried about what other people would think of me.
Yeah.
I said to my wife, my mum, I said, this doesn't leave here. No one knows about this. But the longer it's gone, and the more I sort of try to identify with other people. So I listen to podcasts every morning in the gym. So I was typing in alcohol free, sobriety, whatever it was, and I came across yours. And I wanted to listen to other people, so it felt like I wasn't on my own.
Yeah.
And I was trying to reach out to, if there was any news story of an ex-footballer that had a drinking problem, I'd try and reach out to them. And I just became really comfortable talking about it and actually enjoyed talking about it. And it's something now that it's a massive part of my story. And if you asked me 3 years ago what I'd be doing, I would not think I'd be going in talking about alcohol to footballers. It would, yeah, you know, it would not be anywhere near my list. And something else was, I'd look at other people and compare myself too much. It was a big enough issue for me to realize it. Other people would say, God, you weren't that bad, or, you know, you can't have a problem, like, because they'd know me, who I was sober. But I know how big of a problem I had. And I'm, as I said before, I'm so fortunate that I recognized it when I did.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just amazing, isn't it? It's just amazing when you realize that alcohol has zero benefits whatsoever, and that life is there for the taking for you when yeah. you just get back to who you really are, you know.
Yeah.
It's brilliant. And that, just this whole message of positive sobriety, which is what you can bring. Yeah, it's absolutely fantastic, you know, the stuff that you're doing. It's so important. And you know what, just to touch on there what you said about that shame that you felt, you know, like, oh, I'm not going to tell anyone about this. I was exactly the same when I stopped. I felt, because I didn't have any of the support then, you know, that's why I started the sober club, because, you know, I wanted the support, I wanted to create support for other people, but I didn't have any at the beginning. And what was really interesting was I felt such shame and guilt that I didn't want to tell anyone. I mean, I didn't feel any shame and guilt when I was drinking. That seemed completely normal. But once I'd stopped and it actually hit me and I was able to really see it clearly, I felt so ashamed. And I try and help people with that one, because it's a really big one. And I think we have to be able to be comfortable with, you know, accepting, letting go, forgiving ourselves, letting go of what was. We've seen it, right? And now from that place, we can move forward. And as you say, now, because you are able to speak out about it and be open and share your own story, that's going to ripple out massively. That's going to be amazing if one person hears you talking on this and it makes difference for them. It's incredible, isn't it? Really incredible. Yeah,
I think something that I write down in my notes a lot on my phone, but something I tried to dig into was, when I first stopped, it was like, I'm missing out on so much. And I was thinking of things in my head. I'm like, I've got three stag do's this summer for three of my friends. And I'm like, they're all going to be drinking and I'm going to be left out. And, you know, if I'm going on holiday at an airport with my wife, I want to be able to have a drink, and I'm going to be missing this and doing that. But honestly, the longer you go, I felt the first initial stages I found really tough. Mm. There was a quote that I saw that said, the best thing about being sober is you get your feelings back. The worst thing about being sober is you get your feelings back.
Exactly. So you got to feel all the feels.
Those nights that I drifted off in my own head with alcohol were now filled with thoughts. So you have to do something with that. And I think for me, the reason, or, you know, trying to find the reason to why I felt I was going to miss out on something. So trying to understand, is it confidence? So can I try and make myself better in social situations and put myself into those situations a bit more, so I become comfortable with that drink? And I really go out of my way to do that now.
Yeah.
I try and come out of my comfort zone and speak to people and put myself in there where I wouldn't have done before without a drink. Or something silly like dancing. That was a massive, massive fear of mine.
Yeah, well, it's a funny one, because people always go, oh my God, but I'll never be able to dance sober.
Honestly.
But you go, do you know what? You couldn't dance drunk either. It's just that you didn't care.
You've hit the nail on the head there, because I cannot dance. So my only experience would be, right, if I get drunk enough, I go on the dance floor and I don't care.
Yeah, you don't care, exactly.
That for me is probably one of the biggest reasons why I started drinking, because I cared. Yeah. I worried so much about what other people thought of me. Yeah. I wanted people to like me.
You know what? It's so much cheaper just to go and have dance lessons. if that really is a thing.
That is actually something that I've written down and that I'm looking into in the future, because I want to experience everything properly. And, you know, I want to get to a point where I can go and dance sober. I don't care what someone else is looking at. If they're looking at me that much, they're obviously not enjoying their night enough.
I mean, we know, don't we, with everything we've been saying, it all tracks back to self-esteem, doesn't it? All tracks back to how you feel about yourself. And when you actually do care about yourself, you know, who cares what you look like on the dance floor if you're having fun? Literally, who cares? It just does not matter, does it?
No.
Anyway, so tell us about the work you're doing now then. You're working as a consultant, yeah?
Yeah, so I came out of football and I actually went back into Chelsea. So that was sort of my first port of call. I was really worried and anxious and uncertain about the future. It was the only thing I'd ever done to earn money. And obviously my wife was 8 months pregnant, so I felt like I had quite a lot of pressure on me. But they put me in touch with someone that went around and he's a media lawyer actually, but goes around and educated players on off-field behaviors. And that's I ended up teaming up with him and creating a business called B5 Consultancy. And it started off very different to what it is now. And it's myself, Matt Himsworth, and a girl called Lee Nichol. And there's a book that I read called The Obstacle Is the Way. And I'm a massive believer in that. And some of the worst parts of my life, which have been how I retired and I wasn't ready for it. My whole identity was wrapped up into being a footballer. I had issue with alcohol. All of those things now, it's my responsibility to pass those on to people coming through so they don't get themselves into that situation. And just
Absolutely.
any way that I can help off the field with a player, because I don't want them, leaning on unhealthy escapes or becoming addicted to or obsessed with anything. Because I do think, and I listened to one of your episodes, I can't remember who it was. It was a female that talked about obsessive behaviors or addictive behaviors. And I think she said there was a study that they might be a myth, but there is definitely a level of obsession to become a professional footballer or a professional musician or professional, whatever it might be. You have to be really driven and you can get obsessed. And sometimes you can transfer that obsession to something else.
Definitely,
So
definitely.
I see a pattern. I also see a real pattern of players retiring from the game and retiring from any sport, whether it's football, rugby, Olympic sports, is a huge one. No matter how much money they've got in the bank, no matter how much success they've had, they need a purpose, going forward. And to try and reframe retirement, because it's an awful word to throw at a 30-year-old or
Absolutely,
35-year-old.
absolutely.
It's
Well, you just feel like you're not needed anymore.
it signals
That's
the
it.
end, and almost reframing it to a rebirth. So
Definitely.
you've had all this life experience and a great time, but actually a football career especially is a real short fraction of your life. I think the average football career will last until 33, 34. I think the average male in the country doesn't lives until 81, so you're not even halfway through your life. So reframing that, you don't have to just retire at 35 and your life's over and it's all seen as downhill from here. Trying to switch that round and trying to educate people to be more than a footballer and not to define themselves by what they're doing.
Yeah, brilliant. Well, amazing work. And what an amazing role model you're going to be for your little girl. I mean, God, that's my only regret is that I didn't do it sooner, when my kids were younger. So, yeah,
It's something
amazing.
that, again, that's a huge motivation. I'm fortunate that she didn't see me as a drunk. Or in any kind of state like that. So I'm incredibly blessed for that. And I want to be the best dad that I can be, and that is me sober. There's not a chance in my head that I'll go back. There's obviously days where you think about things and you're maybe stressed or whatever it might be, but I really do feel like I've seen a complete different way of life. I've seen
Brilliant.
opportunities open up that I didn't see before. And just honestly, I never wanted to be sober. If I'm totally honest, I saw it as a negative. I
Yeah,
saw it
we all
as,
do, don't we? I mean, until you can step into that world and realize there's a whole world out there that's it's better to be sober. I had no idea. All I could think of was, oh my God, how am I going to cope? And I knew it was something I needed to do, but I certainly didn't want to even think about it. And this is the message, isn't it, that we have to put
I think
across.
it can be fun. It can be cool. I think it'll be quite a cool thing to be in the next, years to come.
Yeah,
Now
it's
we've got
already
education
changing.
and
It's
role
good.
models. I looked at someone like Bradley Cooper, and I was like, the guy's filmed The Hangover. He's done A Star
I
Is
know,
Born,
I
done
know.
all this kind of stuff, and he's sober. I was like,
Yeah,
he's not
exactly.
boring. He's not.
Exactly. I think you find there's an awful lot of celebs, and that's why the bloody looks are good, right? We are definitely the lucky ones. There's no doubt about that. Fraser, it's great to talk to you. Brilliant work that you're doing. Is there anything you want to promote or point people towards?
I'm trying now to start sharing a lot more on Instagram. So I'm on Instagram at Fraser Franks. I was on TalkSport around six weeks ago now.
Fantastic.
Yeah. And I sort of came public with my issues with alcohol, and I've had a lot of people speak to me and identify with what I'm doing at the minute. So I feel like I'm in a position where I want to be vulnerable, to share more, and to also show that, not to take myself too seriously, I want people to see that I can still be fun, that I can still be adventurous. And
absolutely.
The people that are, I've heard you talk about grey area drinkers.
Yeah,
those are the ones I'm really keen to affect.
Exactly. So yeah, and get them while they're young.
Yeah, exactly.
So they don't have to go through that ridiculous goddamn rite of passage thing of like, I have to drink because everyone else does. No, you don't. You can have your own identity and have an alcohol-free beer. It's cool. Yeah, brilliant. Thanks ever so much. I really appreciate it. And we'll look forward to seeing all the magic that you create. I think you're going to do some amazing stuff. It'd be brilliant. Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Fraser. Don't forget, you can follow Fraser, follow me on Instagram, stay connected. If you have thought about joining the Sober Club, but you're just not sure, give it a try. Message me if you want more information. It's not expensive. You join for a month and then leave if you don't like it. But the resources are massive, though I say so myself, okay? It is incredible value. We've got incredible resources. And I am lucky that I get great experts to contribute, really fantastic people who have given their time and have done exclusive stuff for us. So there really is everything in our member portal, absolutely everything, from nutrition and fitness and meditation and mindfulness and how to sort out cravings, loads of videos with William Porter, loads of stuff about sugar swaps, of course, that's a big one for many people, how to find your purpose, how to go on holiday ditching the booze. It's all in there. So, and of course we have our private group as well, where a lot of the magic happens and we connect all the time. So do check it out if you haven't already, thesoberclub.com. I'll see you same time next week. Have a great week. Thank you for listening to the Alcohol Free Life podcast, brought to you by The Sober Club. Please rate and review. And if you want support, accountability and inspiration, and you want to live your best life without the booze, check out thesoberclub.com.